Welcome back to Midday Magazine. I'm Alan Chartok. On the evening of Saturday, June 15th, the Berkshire Bach Society will present violinist Joe Silverstein in concert for a celebratory event on his 80th birthday. The concert at a private residence in South Egremont, Massachusetts, will include works by Bach, Haydn, and Mozart, performed by Silverstein with more than 2.5-century-old violin that was formerly the concert instrument of 19th-century female French violin virtuoso Camilla Urso. Joining us now with more on his birthday concert is violinist Joe Silverstein. Joe, you're a hero in the Berkshires. There is no cause that I know of that you haven't been so generous to, and it really does speak so well of you and what you've been willing to do for all of us. I appreciate it so much.
Well, it's very kind of you to say that. Actually, it's all self-indulgent because I love to play.
You're great. Give us a little of your history. I remember when you were concertmaster and frequently soloist, but tell us how it all started.
My Boston history started in the second violin section of the orchestra, and in 1959 I was fortunate enough to participate in the Queen Elizabeth of Belgium competition, which I did fairly well. I then won the Walter Naumburg competition, and shortly thereafter, I was appointed concertmaster of the symphony.
So did you go from second violin to concertmaster?
There was a brief stop in the first violin section.
How does one get from the second violin? Is it like being promoted from assistant professor?
No, actually, you don't have to shoot a lot of people, but you've got to play a couple of auditions.
Is that right? Are they blind auditions?
Actually, in those years, they were not. Uh-huh. But the Boston Symphony was the first orchestra to institute auditions behind a screen.
Do you remember when you made it? What you're feeling? Were you quelling? Was there something? Was it one of those great moments in your life?
Well, actually, it was the realization of something that my mother used to say almost jokingly when I was a kid. She said, if you don't practice, how will you ever be concertmaster of the Boston Symphony? And that was, of course, because the Boston Symphony in the years when I was growing up in Detroit was the symbol of excellence in symphony orchestras.
Still is, isn't it?
I guess so.
Joe, tell us about the violins you have played. What was your first violin?
When I was studying at the Curtis Institute, I was playing on a violin which had been made by my grandfather.
Really?
Who was a professional violin maker in Detroit in the 20s. And I still own three violins that were made by my grandfather, which are, of course, very treasured possessions for me. And the violin that I'm playing on when I play on the 15th of June is a violin which I acquired in the 70s. And the instrument was actually a solo instrument in the first year of the Boston Symphony's existence in 1881. It was used by this famous woman violinist, Camilla Urso, in her debut with the Boston Symphony. So I'm only the temporary occupant of the instrument.
When you say temporary, what does that mean?
Well, it means that I'm going to use it until until somebody else is going to use it. It has been used happily by a lot of people. Certainly, an instrument which has survived since 1742 has a lot more staying power than I do.
Do you ever look at the instrument and try to place it in situ, for want of a better term, and say, you know, somebody in pantaloons was playing this violin at some point?
Certainly in different venues than I have been performing on the instrument. I've been performing on the instrument in much larger situations physically than the instrument was originally intended to be performed on. But it has withstood the size of the shed of Stanglewood very, very nicely on a number of occasions. The venue in which we're playing, Ken Cooper and I are playing, on the 15th of June is actually a reconstructed barn on the property of Adrian Van Zandt. And Ben Luxon and I auditioned the acoustics of this barn and found it to be absolutely wonderful.
And how did you get together with Ken Cooper, who, of course, is a wonderful harpsichordist and conductor? How did that work out?
Well, that worked out because Ken was kind enough to invite me several years ago to participate in one of the Berkshire Bach Society's New Year's concerts, and I have participated in several of those since then, and I've had a great time playing with Ken. And I'm very happy that that he has agreed to participate in this concert, and he is bringing his forte piano. So we're going to see how well that instrument blends with my 1742 violin.
You know, Joe Silverstein, it's so interesting that you can, you know, put your violin under your arm and go to Adrian Van Zandt's wonderful barn. But how about the piano? You can't put that under your arm.
No, no, that has to be transported, and it has to be tuned on site.
Of course.
So the logistics with the keyboard instrument are a whole lot more complicated.
This sounds like a wonderful concert. It really sounds like a fantastic opportunity to be out in the woods to hear a great concert. Tell us a little bit about the logistics. It's your 80th birthday, and it's
well, actually, it is 1 year late because last year when we wanted to do it, on my birthday, there was a conflicting event, which was our younger grandson's college graduation, which certainly took precedent over any concert.
I should say. How does it feel to be 80 years old or 81?
Well, actually, it feels very, very good because I'm fortunate that my fingers still move with the same velocity that they moved at a number of years ago. So I'm enjoying my activities as player, teacher, conductor, without any stop, and I have a couple of wonderful opportunities to perform again this summer in various benefit configurations and also teaching at the Tanglewood Music Center.
Well, of course, how is that? Do you love teaching those young, aspiring, but very talented young people?
Yes, I certainly enjoy that. The feedback is great. It's certainly challenging to work with people of that talent level. As I do also during the winter at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia and also at the Boston Conservatory. The talent level is so high, certainly at the Tanglewood Music Center, and the projects that I've been involved in have been very rewarding for me.
Besides the BSO, you've been with other orchestras. Why don't you tell us about those?
Yes, I was the music director of the Utah Symphony Orchestra for 15 years. And I have been the artistic advisor, or what I like to be called, the designated in-betweener with 10 different orchestras during their period of searching for a new music director. They needed somebody to sort of mine the store, as it were, and choose programs for the candidates for the music directorship and engage soloists and sort of just manage the artistic policy during their search period. So I've been involved with a lot of orchestras.
A sort of paladin. You go around, have conductor's baton and violin, and will travel.
Absolutely.
You've served under a lot of conductors, as well as being a conductor, but I wanted to ask you, has any of them stood out as really great, gentle people, as opposed to a pain in the rear?
Well, I would all only give you the most positive.
That's
response.
Why I asked the question the way I asked it.
Yeah, you phrased it beautifully.
Hoping I might get the other side of it too, but go ahead.
No, not a chance, Alan. I will only tell you about the few whom I've really enjoyed working for so much. Certainly William Steinberg, Eugene Ormandy, Sir John Barbaroli, the late Colin Davis, Claudio Abbado, Daniel Barenboim, all of these people were wonderful, and certainly the years with the orchestra with Seiji were very rewarding for me, as he was very generous in presenting me as a soloist with the orchestra on many occasions. And then, of course, I am so grateful to Eric Leinsdorf, who engaged me as concertmaster for the orchestra.
Tell us a little bit about concertmaster. The concertmaster always gets his hand shook, but also is responsible for tuning up the orchestra?
Well, that's the ceremonial business of standing in front of the orchestra while the oboe gives the communal A. But the more important duty of the concertmaster is coordinating the bowings of the string section with the other principals.
Oh, interesting.
When you see the bows going up and down, hopefully together and simultaneously, that is the result of markings that are made in the orchestral parts so that that we're coordinated and we're moving our bows in the same direction at the same time.
Have you ever seen anybody go in the wrong direction and had to call them up short on it?
Well, I couldn't see them because they were behind me.
Of course, yeah.
So I had to leave that up to the conductor.
Right. I was interested in the oboe and the truet. Why the oboe?
It is because that sound is a very clear, penetrating sound which can be heard by everyone. And the oboe, because of the nature of the reed, has really a pretty much fixed pitch. He makes his reeds to play at a certain level. In the Boston Symphony, it is what we call A442. That has been sort of the official pitch of the Boston Symphony for a number of years.
A442.
And we rely on the integrity of the first oboe to present us with that model A that we tune to.
Only because I'm a devil and always looking for an exception. Has any oboe player ever given that A442, which you suspect is not really a true A442?
Well, there was one very humorous incident when the oboe player of a certain major orchestra gave an A which the members of the orchestra found to be low enough so that they groaned, and the conductor said to the oboe player, "When it gets to 439, sell."
That's very funny. Joe Silverstein, tell us a little bit about the travails of carrying an instrument that's that valuable around with you. You know, we know that certain people who live amongst us have left them in the back seats of taxi cabs. Has anything like that ever happened to you?
No, I've been pretty responsible in taking care of my instrument. Certainly the business of getting it up over the seat in the baggage racks on airplanes now,
God,
with people stuffing their rollerboards in, I tend to try to get on the plane early, put it up there, and put a couple of blankets or a couple of other things, and then close the door of the baggage area. And when people come and sort of approach it with a rollerboard, I look balefully at them and say, "It's filled."
There are, of course, cello players and others who buy seats on the airplane for their instrument. You've never had to do that?
No, happily not.
So is there anything that stands out about this wonderful concert that is coming up on Saturday, June 15th at 7 p.m. in South Egremont? Is there anything that stands out as something that is a must-hear?
Well, we are playing at the opening of the concert a work by Bach, a standalone sonata for violin and keyboard, which is not frequently played. It is a sonata in E minor, which, as I say, is rarely performed. And then after that, I will play the partita for solo violin in D minor, which finishes with the very famous Chaconne.
We are talking to Joseph Silverstein. Joe Silverstein will be performing his 80th birthday celebration concert, but really his 81st, Saturday, June 15th at 7 p.m. in South Egremont, Massachusetts. The only thing I can tell you about South Egremont is if you're driving through South Egremont, go slow.
Be very careful.
Tickets and much more information can be found at the website of the Berkshire Bach Society. It's berkshirebach.org. Joe Silverstein, thank you so much for joining us today. You're a hero amongst all of us, and we very much appreciate everything you've done.
Well, thank you for having me, and I urge all of you to make your pledges online now.